was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever been fired from every job we ever had and then gone on to be millionaires. Maybe just the first half of that.
Fingers crossed, though.
That's
where that leads.
Late bloom. Today's title is The Colonel's Secret Recipe, Shooting the Competition. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man who is never slack-jawed unless it's after a really long lunch. He is an associate professor of communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
You know what? We're here. We're alone now this time again. We don't have a guest. We did in the first episode. Now, this is our fifth season, though, which is cool. Did you think this was going to make it this long? Or is this the end?
I figured somebody would have pulled the plug way before this point, but it hasn't happened yet.
Or you just have no ideas left.
We have not run into that.
This is a great idea, though. Colonel Sanders, KFC. Right. It's great, though. You know, and you're always mentioning how we work at West Kentucky Community and Technical College.
A great place to go to school. Right. Is that right?
Well, we're at the School of Art. We're recording this. You mentioned that at the end. I don't know if people get to that point. Of course they do.
So mention it up front just in case this
time.
Well,
sure. I think it's just cool that we can, it's a great studio, great place to be here and just,
We do a lot of exciting things. That is true. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, our main event will examine how Colonel Sanders was nearly killed in a dispute before making it big. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. The products are real, only the sponsorship is fake.
The secret of a good figure often lies in the brassiere. Hundreds of thousands of women wear the Bien Jolie brassiere for the reason that they regard it as necessary as a corset. It supports the bust and back and gives the figure the youthful outline which fashion decrees. Bien Jolie brassieres are the daintiest, most serviceable garments imaginable. Only the best of materials are used. For instance, Waylon, a flexible boning of great durability, absolutely restless, permitting laundering without removal. They come in all styles, and your local dry goods dealer will show them to you on request. If he does not carry them, he can easily send them for you by writing to us. Send for an illustrated booklet showing styles that are in high favor.
What is a serviceable bra? That's what I want to know.
It gets the job done, I guess. It's rustless. We know that. What she said was rustless, which means, I guess, their wires might rust if
you
wash them.
Yeah, you get the wires in there, and if they get wet, if you use a low-quality metal, then that's not going to turn out right.
Yeah, they get all rusty and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, it's an important function.
Of course it is, especially when it
demands.
Especially when it's serviceable. That is true.
Yeah. This language, though, sometimes, it's like another time. It is another time.
Yeah, 1915.
It's like another planet. Right. It's so flowery language for all these advertisings.
A little wordy by today's standards.
Yeah, right.
And today they just stick the slogan in and let her rip, right?
They want it to be like actually relatable and simple. Back then it was like fancy. Yeah.
I think so.
50 cents, that's it?
All it takes.
There it is in the ad, yeah. Okay.
But, of course, in 1915, 50 cents is like half a day's pay.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
So, it'd be probably a little pricey. That better be good quality then, right?
Sure. keep going, Brent. Oh, no. No, before you keep going, I insist on interrupting your keeping going because, as you remember, last time I found, I've been listening to an old episode. Yeah, that's what it was, an old episode.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. You sounded horrible. I sounded great.
Well, we were both slowed down, almost as if we'd been slowed down 50% exactly.
Interesting.
But I don't know what happened there. I don't know. It was just a sleepy time. When did we recorded that thing at 2 a.m.? I don't know.
I bet it was 2 p.m. after lunch, right?
Nice one of those long four martini lunches. Mm. Have you ever had a martini? That's pretty fancy too, isn't it?
That is fancy. That's that, like, would be right out of 1915.
Yeah, it's pretty arrogant, I guess. Okay, well, let's listen to it though, because it surprised me how a little out of it we sounded.
All right, let's hear it. The auditor finally became suspicious and last week sent one of his expert accountants to help Mr. Tate out. Hey, I know you're behind.
Right.
I understand. I sympathize with that. I've got a guy who's great with math. He can really add stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He can carry the three like nobody's business.
Got one of those fancy adding machines with the arm.
In that era, I bet they
did. Right. The chunk, chunk, chunk.
That was one of the new Gilded Age inventions that were making things easy. Oh, that's so awesome that you could send this guy over, but I'm out of town.
Do you have any memory of this?
I remember that episode clearly. Uh-huh. And once again, I was sounding superb, but right? I have no idea what's going on with you.
Well, you sounded like mid-yawn the whole time. I'm starting to miss those kids' historians is what I'm starting to do.
They are awfully cute. I have to go back to the previous seasons and start the binge listening.
Yeah, I know. Uh-huh. Right. Okay. Well, like I said, we were slower for some reason that day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
A really long lunch, I suspect. And now we are ready for the moment we've all been waiting for.
The main event.
We have been dying to do this little episode, haven't we, Jason? Colonel Sanders.
Colonel Sanders. How can you beat that?
How did it take till season 5 to get to Colonel
it's
Sanders?
Old Kentucky tales.
So we did the old stuff first, and now we're doing the new stuff?
People know that, right? It's Kentucky Fried Chicken.
They try to throw
it off as KFC.
Yeah.
Because fried kind of became like not a good thing to eat, even though it's fantastic. So they changed to KFC. Did you notice that they did that?
I did notice that.
It was Kentucky Fried Chicken when we were a kid, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
The really long sign. Remember they spelled out
it's
all
like
of
red
Kentucky
cursive.
And,
sure. Yeah, it's good.
I think the
colonel was a real guy is what you're saying.
He was most certainly a real guy, not an invention like some icons out there.
But that look, he had the little mustache, the little thing, the little chin whiskers.
Yeah, so the look was contrived.
Right.
This was a showmanship kind of thing, and it worked.
Sure, made himself super famous.
That's exactly what happened. But what we're going to look at today is before he was the icon, he really struggled. This was the thing about Colonel Sanders. He was 40 years old before he had any success at all in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so he started off really tough early life.
Yeah.
His father died young age, and that meant that his mom had to work a lot. He took on a lot of the family responsibilities, which is things like cooking. And you see there just mm-hmm. the first step on the way
chopping
to
wood.
Stardom.
Right.
And then okay. when he became a little bit older, he started doing manual labor jobs. This is what you do when you're poor, right? You trade your labor out there on the workforce. And he worked in the railroad industry for a while, doing the really hard kind of stuff. And there was one day he saw a lawyer come along, and he made money chasing a train wreck. The same way you think about ambulance chasers today.
Oh, okay.
This guy was a train chaser. So if something goes wrong with the train, he goes out there, he rounds up anybody who was involved in it and says, hey, this is my contact information. And
the colonel wanted in on that.
The colonel thought, that's the way you do it.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way to make money that doesn't involve me and a shovel or something like that.
Right.
So he decided, okay, I'm going to study law, and he did. This was back in the days where it's kind of the end of that era where you could just study law and right. then you take the bar.
It wasn't quite like law school exactly.
No law school
you
was
knew
required.
It. You had if you studied it up enough.
Yeah. If you studied all the laws and you could pass the bar examination, you did not need to go to law school.
Right.
And this is the way he did it. So that's a cheap way. That's the poor man's way of getting educated back
sure.
then. And he accomplished that goal. He became a lawyer.
Oh, he did.
He sure did. And he had a very brief career in law. What happened was he got into a fight with his client right in the middle of the courtroom, right in front of the judge.
Uh-huh.
And that ended his legal career.
Like a fist fight?
Yeah. A physical altercation okay. right there in the middle of the courtroom.
Yeah.
And that did him in law.
So he's kind of a hothead a little bit here.
He was famous for
really?
The temper.
Okay.
That's true. And
you might even say he's a bit of a pressure cooker, wouldn't you say?
Just waiting to go off of that chicken inside, that delicious, yummy,
that one
golden
was for
chicken.
You. I did not dream that one up.
That was perfect.
Yeah.
He then decided he was going to sell insurance for a while. And he was great at this. As a matter of fact, nobody out there could outsell him in the insurance business. But then the company he was working for...
Go ahead.
The company he was working for. Oh, yeah, Colonel Sanders is selling you your insurance.
Oh, his insurance policy smelled like gravy and all that. Go ahead. I came with a...
So he made the sales.
Parfait.
That's true. He made the sales, and then he refused to fill out the paperwork that went along after the sale was over with, because the part he liked was the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Getting the client all excited about insurance and, oh, this is my deductible. But uh-huh. then he didn't actually want to fill out forms about deductibles.
Right.
Okay. That's no good.
He's allergic to money.
And they told him, look, you're going to have to fill these things out.
Yeah.
And he said, no, I don't think so.
He's a big picture guy. Is this, like you say, the show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that meant that he got fired from that job. And so now he's out of the insurance industry, we should say. He then decided, okay, I'm going to be a entrepreneur. He started a lamp factory. That failed.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't go anywhere. He got back into sales. He sold tires for a while. This is actually really up his alley. He had to dress as the Michelin man.
Okay.
And put on little shows around town, do demonstrations. It was things like he'd hire a couple of farm boys, and they'd go out there, and they would pump the tires, and they would try to prove that the inferior tire would blow up first if you overinflated it.
Uh-huh.
All kinds of gimmicky stuff like that.
You mean like the Michelin man, like the guy that's made out of tires?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's in a costume?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something happened there. That one's actually a little bit murky. We're not really sure why that one didn't pan out, but he lost that job. Then the next thing you know, he's hitchhiking, because that's how you get around if you don't have a ride. And in the 1930s, that's actually perfectly acceptable. People
sure.
did it, and
yeah.
it was, you pick people up, and it was just kind of like a courtesy thing.
Get in the back. Get on the back of the
yeah.
truck bed. Right, sure.
And while he was hitchhiking, he met a man from Standard Oil and put on his little show. Talked his way into managing a station at Nicholasville, Kentucky. That was a big success. He was really good at running that. And really, for the first time in his adult life, he did not sabotage himself. The Great Depression sabotaged him.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the late 20s.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, here's the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of businesses, good businesses, didn't matter, were going under in the Depression. And that just, that took that particular opportunity away from him. That
Maybe
station closed down.
Might be for the best, though. We wouldn't be having Extra Crispy today.
That might be. If he had been satisfied,
right.
then you wouldn't be satisfied.
That's right. I wouldn't.
When you're
yes.
going for the chicken. So during the Depression, he then managed to talk his way into a new job, which was for a competing company operating a station in Corbin, Kentucky, for Shell. That's another big name, just like Standard Oil was. It was a really tough assignment. It was kind of like a Hail Mary on Shell's part. That station was just about on its last legs. He wanted the opportunity. They thought, okay, he's been good at this before. We'll give it a shot. If it doesn't work out, we'll just close that just like the others. And this was a really tough assignment because Corbin was a tough town. It had a reputation for violence. It had a reputation for bootlegging back during the Prohibition era, which this is just coming out of that time. It was a bootlegging hub. So you know that when there's crime, there's violence that goes along with the crime. The part of Corbin that the station was located in was known as Hell's Half Acre. So that doesn't exactly sound like the most pleasant place to be. He kept a handgun near the cash register, and he kept a shotgun at home in the bedroom. And he also had cutthroat competition. Really, maybe literally cutthroat competition. The guy's name was Matt Stewart, and he owned another gas station that wasn't so far away. It's the Depression, so you've got to have a really good game plan.
Right, yeah.
You can't spend a lot of money. The natural thing, then, is guerrilla marketing.
Sure.
This way you don't have to put out any kind of money in the newspapers or radio ads back then or any of the ways that big money advertising was going on.
Right.
So he's going to do painting the sides of barns, painting walls, anything like that, local landmarks, to help direct people to go by his gas station.
Right.
The signs aren't even necessarily about his gas station. He's saying, yeah, like, go north on this highway to Lexington.
Oh, okay. So they're kind of just any suggestion to go near the gas station or go past it.
That's what he was doing with these signs.
Okay.
And his competition did not like this, primarily because he doubled his business. And so that's taking that other business right out of the other guy's pocket. And I guess at last, what he did was he painted one sign too many. There was a railroad wall, and he painted his little sign on there. And Matt Stewart, the other owner, the competitor, painted over that sign with something called creosote. This is a coal tar, and apparently once that's on there, you cannot paint another sign over top of it.
That's what you get in your chimney, I think, right, when you burn?
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly the coating that happens when you're burning wood.
Yeah, that's the thing that creates the danger of the fire and all that business.
Yeah,
it is amazing that you knew that, because I did not know that until I researched the word creosote.
Well, I once had a chimney. It was fine, but it was a thought. It was a concern.
You're worried about that spontaneous fire to protect, that might burn the house down because you had an open flame in the house. Well, I understand. Sanders.
I've amazed you again with knowing.
That was amazing. I mean, that's a really obscure term.
That's true.
Sanders took rags and gasoline and went down there, removed the creosote, and thought, okay, we're going to get a blank slate here again. He then visited Matt Stewart. And it's actually a little unclear here, too. Either the colonel said this or Matt Stewart said this.
Okay.
But one of the other of them said to the other person, I'm going to blow your GD head off.
Yikes.
Which, again, fits the... He was actually a really bad cusser,
too. Sweet little Colonel Sanders.
Of course, he's probably really foul mouth.
28 years old at this time, right? He's pretty...
Even in his older days, though.
Younger guy.
He once joined a church because he thought maybe it could help him cuss less. So, I mean, it was a thing that he had with him his whole life, you know.
So he was a little salty then, you could say.
Yeah. So the
little greasy
the chicken
character
was salty.
A little bit. Uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh.
Exactly right. Then it happened. May 7th, 1931, a truck driver pulls into Sanders' station and says that Stewart was painting over his sign again. Now, he's been told about this.
Right.
And you have to understand, late 19th century, early 20th century, Kentucky, somebody tells you, like, look.
Right.
They're serious. They're dead serious.
But people take these matters into their own hands.
Of course.
Often.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when it came to business, and you're running me out of business, and do it violently. Yeah.
That's what happened here. It was a complete coincidence, but there were two Shell executives who were hanging out with Colonel Sanders when this message got delivered.
Right.
Their names were Robert Gibson and H.D. Shelburne.
Uh-huh.
I cannot imagine this in 2018, but all three of them got their gun.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And decided they were going to go down there and confront this guy.
Oh yeah, we're going to settle his hash.
And they confronted him. They caught him in the act.
Oh.
So he's up there with the ladder, with a paintbrush.
Uh-huh.
The whole bit.
They killed him. No?
No.
Okay, good.
But they were close.
Right.
So he jumps down off of the sign, off the ladder. He grabs the gun. They see him draw his, so they all pull their guns.
Oh, no. It really happened, though?
It happened.
Started shooting.
It was, if you've ever read about the OK Corral shootout.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It sounds a whole lot like that, where they had all these shots fired in just
right, back
2 minutes
forth.
Or something.
Yeah, hitting each other.
Whole lot of gunplay. Well, that's what happened here. It's kind of like a shootout at the Corbin Corral. Stewart hit Gibson, which is one of the Shell executives, and that was a fatal shot. So he actually did die out of this.
Oh, geez.
Sanders hit Stewart. Stewart also hit Shelburne, which is the other executive.
Uh-huh.
Everybody who didn't die got arrested.
Right. Okay.
And so all this is going to go to court, and they got to figure all this stuff out. When the authorities got to the bottom of it, Stewart got an 18-year sentence. Shelburne and Sanders walked away with no penalty. So they walked.
Right.
Stewart then, while he was in prison, got killed by a deputy sheriff. And so there were all kind of rumors about that. Nobody knows exactly what happened with that one. But,
right.
but that's
okay.
how he ended. And for the colonel, this is like a happy ending. Because he's cornered the Corbin market at that point. He's the only game in town as far as gas station sales are concerned. Then he decided to be a great sideline to sell food while he sold the gasoline. And actually, it was like a gimmick. The chicken was a gimmick to get more gas customers.
Oh, really? Okay.
And
then people liked the chicken
big,
even more. Right. Yeah. And they said, I'll just sell chicken.
Yeah.
So he didn't get shot at all. Everybody got shot except for the colonel.
I don't know if he was just lucky there or what, but I mean, he could have died.
Yeah.
Could have died that day.
Everybody got shot.
Yeah.
By somebody. Okay.
So,
that's true. Is that all? Is that the colonel? I mean, where do you come up with what's the original recipe?
Okay.
It's
so
just the first thing he thought of, it sounds like to me.
Yeah. So he had a really great recipe. He had a really great gravy recipe.
Really?
He actually never really forgave the corporation for changing the gravy recipe.
Hmm.
He hated that, but they did it because it saved money.
Right.
He sold out.
Yeah.
He sold the business for $2 million. And at that point, he became an employee, which is, he's like a paid spokesman.
Right, the mascot for
KFC.
For it. Yeah.
Right.
Well, by then, he had established that look. I mean, his picture is drawn on all those boxes.
Yeah, that was in the years in between there where he was trying to make it on his own.
Uh-huh.
And he actually was fairly successful with that. He got some people out west, for example, that he met at business conferences to sell his chicken with his recipe and all that. And he was getting a cut of that money.
Yeah.
But then where it really exploded was when it turned into this corporation and some businessmen around Louisville bought him out. And then that's what turned it into.
Oh, okay.
And then it was traded publicly and all of that stuff.
Right, yeah.
But he made it pretty big on his own, and then really big once he made the sale of the company.
Right, sure. Well, he's gone now, I'm sure. He's passed.
Yeah, now just actors play him in various commercials.
That's what they're doing. Yes, they get different comedians to, in an exaggerated way, play their version of the colonel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was a real dude, just like you said. And we better pay a few bills around here. Our sponsor for this part of the program is the G. Nicholas Wig Manufactory. G. Nicholas invites the attention of his customers and others to his newly invented ventilating diamond wigs. Warranted not to shrink, those who have worn wigs know that the greatest comfort in a wig is one that will not shrink at all. Besides, they are so close a resemblance to nature as to defy detection. G. Nicholas on 4th Street in Louisville. So don't you hate it when your wig shrinks?
No. Why would it shrink?
I guess people washed them because if you wear it every day, you probably aren't supposed to. But I guess, bet people did, right?
Well, I mean, it's still going to collect dust. Like, I don't know. I don't know. That's something I don't know. Do you wash a wig? And if you do, how do you ever get it to look back the way that it did?
People need to leave some comments about that if they know whether you wash wigs or not.
I don't have any experience with it. It's a wig.
Yeah.
This is real right here, Brent. I'm sorry, but this is real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
You get the full wig effect without actually having to have a wig.
Oh, thank you. I agree. You're saying that my hair looks like a wig.
No, I'm saying you've got a lot of hair.
Ah.
That's what I'm saying. People would want to achieve your look with a wig.
Yes. Okay.
That's from 1852.
Ladies wear wigs. They wear wigs. It's not necessarily hair that's missing. It's just, it's a look. You right?
Yeah.
Easy look.
I think so. Just put the thing on and go instead of all the preparation time.
Yeah.
Could be the case. Now for the moment you hate the very most, Jason's takeaway.
Yeah.
What Jason learned out of this? What stood out the most?
I don't know. I guess I like these characters like Colonel Sanders, you know, famous, iconic figures, really. They're kind of a mascot, kind of a real person, an innovator. But we all know him as this old man, you know, this kindly old gray-haired gentleman that a lot of people grew up with just seeing on TV all the time. But to hear those, you know, early adventures of trying to make it, kind of a tough guy, younger guy. Yeah, it's kind of neat.
And the stick-to-itiveness where, I mean, he knew he wanted to do something great and it didn't really matter what that was. He just kept after it.
Well, there's a little detail in there too about the gas station and the chicken that, you know, some things end up like that. Like, oh, I got this chicken that's really good. That'll help people come in to buy gas. Next thing you know, that's the real key to making millions. You know, that's the good part of it. He just didn't really know that.
True. And to that point, one thing that he did was it on the sign that he had. Originally, it used to promote the gas station and cafe, and then it became cafe and gas station.
Yeah, just get gas too, but you're really going to want this chicken.
Yeah, yeah. He recognized that very same thought.
So then, if you went in there, let's say you went in there, are you getting original or are you getting extra crispy?
You're getting the original.
Is that what you like?
And you would have got the good gravy, which I would love to know what that was like.
It's out there somewhere.
I wonder if it is.
Yeah.
We have now turned to the final page of this particular chapter, but never fear, Old Kentucky Tales never fails to return. You can download even more episodes on iTunes or the NPR One app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or rate us. If you did not like what you heard, you probably never even opened this up in the beginning or listened for 1 second and got rid of it.
Quit suggesting that people stop listening.
No, just told the people who don't like it. If you like it, then come back. If you don't like it, then...
No, if you don't like it, come back. Give us another chance.
Huh.
It's got to get better, right?
I doubt it.
This is I don't know about this one.
Special thanks to our producer, Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design, which is a subsidiary of WKCTC and WKMS. And the rest is history.